The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Aaron Rodgers would have been a better choice. Remember, there were rumors a couple of weeks ago that Robert Kennedy Jr. was going to pick Rodgers as his running mate? That would have been a really dumb move, but the person he picked might be worse. Have you ever heard of Nicole Shanahan? And she's not related to the football Shanahan, so it's not connected in any way to football the way Rodgers was. And by the way, she's never heard of you either, but you are going to be hearing a lot about her now that Robert Kennedy Jr. has chosen her to be his running mate. She's 38 years old. She's an attorney in California. She's a big-time abortion rights advocate. She loves criminal justice reform and fighting climate change. She agrees with Kennedy on vaccines causing autism and most of his other issues and his problem with vaccines, but she also donated six figures to George Gasson. He's the DA who ruined San Francisco and is working on ruining Los Angeles if he hasn't already. He's the guy who likes social work better than he likes throwing people in prison, too. She's a big fan of diverting money away from prisons and police to social work and mental health treatment, which makes sense when you think that she donated money to George Gasson. But that's who she is. There are a lot of people out there, including Aaron Rodgers, who RFK could have picked, would have been better. He has no chance of winning. Everybody knows that, so it really doesn't matter, I guess. But it speaks volumes about how liberal he actually is. And there were serious conservatives out there. I'm sure you've heard it. Maybe you even considered it. Not too long ago, they were saying, yeah, I think that this RFK would be a good running mate for Donald Trump. I kind of like this guy because he's very outspoken and everything. Well, and picking her, this deciding to go with Nicole Shanahan is going to cause about half of the people who might have been considering taking RFK seriously to forget it and just focus on Trump and Biden. As of today, RFK Jr. has officially just become annoying and irrelevant. When we come back, the CIA and the FBI are putting on the push for DEI. We'll have the author of Big Intel, how the CIA and FBI went from Cold War heroes to deep state villains, to tell you what kind of a problem that's going to be. And in our second half hour, we'll have some fun laughing at MSNBC. Stick around. Well, Islamic terrorism is back in the news again after the attack in Moscow. ISIS claimed responsibility. That should keep the intelligence community busy. Let's hope it doesn't distract them from making their agencies as woke as possible. J. Michael Waller is the author of Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains, and he joins us now. Michael, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Hey, John, good to be with you.
So it wasn't necessarily espionage that got your attention recently. Apparently the intelligence community has become extra vigilant to prevent jihadists from, I guess, being offended.
Yeah, yeah. And this isn't that new, actually. That report is new, so it's still going on.
Yeah.
But it really started under Bush about 5 years after 9/11 when the radical Muslim groups were saying, oh, you can't call us jihadis or Muslim extremists because it's bigoted.
Yeah, so to what extent are they trying to do this? I mean, how much are they torturing their workers with this?
Quite a bit. There was the Daily Wire broke the story last week that this came straight from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. So this is the office that supervises all professional intelligence personnel in the United States government.
Yeah, and what are they telling them? What are the bad words?
Well, it's like the pronoun police that they also have. They're enforcing that too. So it's the same crew in charge of it. So you can't say things like jihadist. You can't say Islamic extremist. You can't say Islamic radical. You can't say Islamist, which even, you know, most Muslims are fine saying most of those words, as long as you don't brand all of them as extremists. You know, you've got to qualify it somehow. But of course, it's okay to say Christian nationalist or traditional Catholic. That's okay, because those are still the enemy.
Yeah, and it's, I guess I don't understand why they care. Why would you care if someone who you think is a jihadist is upset that you call him a jihadist or a terrorist, or whatever word you want to use for him?
You would think that, yeah, because really in anything, you always need to name the enemy and identify it properly if you're going to know who to go after. But in our case here in America, ever since, you know, 9/11, so that's the professional careers of most people in the intelligence community. The Hamas networks here, the Council on American Islamic Relations being the chief element of them, have been badgering and filing suits and harassing officials and opinion leaders to not say these words. So it's really literally following what the Hamas networks here have been dictating.
And so what is the Community Diversity, Inclusion, and Accessibility Office, and who works there?
Everybody except people like us.
but what is that? That's an actual official department?
Yes, yes. In fact, the CIA has its own, they've expanded it now. It's Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Accessibility Strategy. It's a three-year plan, three-year strategy. They started this actually under Trump, because Trump, you know, made the mistake of letting the CIA run itself, just like Christopher Wray was put in, thanks to Chris Christie's suggestion to put in an FBI director. So you know, critics can accuse Trump of anything except politicizing the intelligence community, as Obama did, and as Biden is reviving. So you have diversity, equity, and inclusion strategies for every single intelligence agency. There are 18 of them in the federal government. You have diversity, equity, and inclusion offices, managers, recruitment strategies, promotional policies, and literally a pronoun police, where if you mispronoun somebody more than three times in the FBI, you know, that's a mark against you in terms of your fitness to be promoted.
So with all the other things that an FBI agent has to be aware of and be concerned with, he's got to make sure his pronouns are okay.
Yes.
Unless
you're sending a SWAT team in to arrest a pro-life activist, then it might be okay.
So, and all the agencies are involved. We're not just talking CIA. It's FBI. It's
everyone. All of them. It started with Obama's CIA director, John Brennan.
And he's a Muslim, isn't he?
Well, that's what people say. I don't know that for a fact, but I do know for a fact, because he's said it several times, that right before he joined CIA, he voted for the Communist Party to run the United States. He voted for Gus Hall.
Yeah, that's a nice guy to have running the CIA. So where does this stuff, you say it was in the Obama administration, it was in the Bush administration. Does it come from the top? Does the top guy, does the president actually get down into this kind of minutia? Or does it just happen and he signs off on it?
Well, in the Bush administration, it came in from the bottom up. It trickled up.
Oh.
And then it organized kind of like cell groups, like the old Communist Party used to organize them in different government agencies and Hollywood and unions and so forth. And they're peppered through the intelligence community that way. They're called the employee resource groups, or the CIA calls them agency resource groups. And so they organized along their aggrieved identity groups so that when a guy like Obama is president with a political agenda, he just says, you know, unleash them. And he had an executive order to that effect in August 2011, unleash them throughout the U.S. government, and it shall be the strategy and the policy of the United States government to promote diversity, equity, and inclusion according to their definition of it, throughout the entire government bureaucracy. And then he had special orders for the intelligence community to do the same. And it was done very aggressively under Obama. It wasn't stopped at all under Trump. They weren't really aware of the problem. They had enough things to worry about. And then among Biden's very first acts as president, with executive orders, he restored this.
Oh, boy. Does this indicate an unwillingness on the people in charge to take Muslim terrorists seriously.
Yeah. Yes. And think of it, though, if you look at the FBI or the CIA's reports, especially the FBI's threat reports, the biggest threats they have say they have found are right wingers, white supremacists,
yep.
You know, the Boogaloo boys. When's the last time you ever heard of a Boogaloo boys attack?
Right.
But that's the main threat. So the FBI, and then think of the January 6th resources, the colossal resources the FBI has put into to busting people for misdemeanors, which the FBI was never supposed to arrest people, you know, do anything significant to go after misdemeanors. So it has diverted its resources to this and whipping up a hysteria about this and then taking people off jihadist counterterrorism cases in order to go after J6 misdemeanors.
And we're talking to J. Michael Waller. He's the author of Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. And speaking of Muslim terrorists, I'm assuming you're also still a senior analyst for strategy at the Center for Security Policy. I'm just wondering what you make of the attack in Moscow and the reports that reports that the U.S. Warned Russia.
I believe that the U.S. warned Russia in advance because it issued the advance warnings. It was known. So other than that, I simply don't know what to believe about who did what, because all the parties involved are serial liars. So I simply don't know what to believe. It seems like it was a jihadist type attack, but you don't know who was behind it or why. Putin has a long track record of blowing up buildings and being involved in other attacks on civilians to suit his own power base and to justify his own policies. This goes back to 1999. So as opposed to who was really behind it, it's anybody's guess right now.
And you say it's anybody's guess, so it could be anybody.
Yes.
Including the U.S., CIA.
Yeah, I would really doubt, you know, as skeptical as I am about the CIA and the administration, what the administration would do, they're not going to run an attack in Moscow because that's grounds for nuclear war.
Right. So that's pushing a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I had you on the show way back in 2021, and you had been at the Capitol on January 6th, and you observed what happened. And without watching any news accounts, you wrote about what you had seen, and you made a point to let your readers know that you were writing your report absent having seen any of the other reports about it, because you didn't want to be influenced. And so you were writing, you know, writing about what you had observed with no influence from outside media. And so I guess what I want to ask you, I know you talked about this when we had you on, but it's a long time ago. What's the short version of what you saw, and how has what has happened since changed your mind, if at all?
No,
I guess there is no short version.
Well, the short version was that it was obviously organized in advance. Now, the narrative at the time was Trump incited this as a spontaneous insurrection. Well, on the ground, if you know what to look for, it's obvious at the time that it was organized in advance, organized units of people with designated colored tape on their gear, certain behavior of small groups of people the whole time. You knew that this was organized in advance. In retrospect, it's obvious. But at the time, it was considered a radical thing to say. So I saw organized cadres coordinating the attacks on the Capitol and using the cover of a lot of well-meaning, unsuspecting people to commit their acts of violence and then to bring in people who kind of get riled up in a crowd situation. So I said that at the time. Chuck Schumer branded it mindless garbage. I was attacked by CNN and the Washington Post, you know, the only times they ever pay attention to anything I say. And that's all fine. But it turns out it was exactly, and even the FBI indictments show that the federal government believes it was organized in advance. The problem now is the FBI won't answer the simple yes-no question that Senator Cruz repeatedly asks. Did the FBI have any assets or personnel involved in the planning and execution of criminal acts of violence at the Capitol on January 6th? And to this day, the FBI still won't say yes or no.
Well, based on what you saw and what the videos show, that's thousands of hours of which have been made available, and there's still more out there. Is there any way that they can deny it with any credibility.
No, not anymore. Not anymore, especially when you see the fake bombs. And then as Steve Baker over at The Blaze revealed, after going painstakingly through these videos, three of the Capitol Police cameras were diverted right when, you know, seconds before something was going to take place. And two of those cameras were at Democratic National Committee headquarters where the bomb was, the supposed bomb was found. So there's a lot there. You've got Capitol Police won't talk. Even though they work directly for Congress, they won't talk. They won't make certain people available. Certain of the Capitol Police who came forward with the Nancy Pelosi narrative are found out to have been serial liars and even disciplinary problems on the Capitol Police force. So there's a lot of smoke here.
So two weeks after January 6th, Joe Biden was in charge. Is it going to take someone other than Joe Biden in charge to ever get to the truth of this?
Oh yeah, I mean, there's no way. They need to keep a lid on this, because this the narrative benefits them to put all these other controls, to centralize political control and to politicize the FBI. Their whole narrative must continue if they're going to have the public rationale to do a lot of the nasty things that they're doing and to weaponize government the way they're doing.
Yeah, and do you have any confidence that even if Donald Trump should win, that the truth is going to come out? The FBI is pretty good at not being forthcoming, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, and they're great at destroying evidence, but they're also sloppy. And that's the nice part. They're sloppy, and there are still people who, look, they're careerists, and we can criticize them all we want for not being courageous and coming forward, but when they have a new FBI director, or when the FBI is being dismantled in favor of something new and different, they're going to come out of the woodwork like crazy. I know, just having written my book, Big Intel, it's been out about 2 months. I've gotten a lot of inside information from people I never even knew about before who are saying, you know, we don't want to go public on this, but your book is speaking for us.
And these are people who are now working in the agencies, the FBI?
Yeah. I won't say which agencies, but it's multiple agencies.
And why are they staying there? Because it's their job and their career, and they have nowhere to go?
Most of it is, look, I've been here, I'm only a few years from retirement, I get my, you know, I'm eligible for my pension in this amount of time, or I've got kids. It's understandable as human beings, but it's not understandable or forgivable as public servants, which they are. However, there are others who say, look, if I don't stand by my post, some woke lunatic is going to get this post, and it's a very sensitive spot, so I'm just keeping my head down. Well, and I don't think it's an excuse. I think it's for real.
In your book, and we're talking to J. Michael Waller, finishing up here, the book is Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. In your book, you say that, and we talked about this at the beginning, is a pretty good indication of it, the Community Diversity, Inclusion, and Accessibility Office, that it's been taken over by cultural Marxists.
Right.
How did that happen?
Well, the whole concept of DEI is cultural Marxist. So we think of Marxism as, you know, the poor fighting against the rich. Yeah. But the original Karl Marx was people should fight against the Western culture that oppresses them. And that's everything from God to the nuclear family and everything in between. And that's what cultural Marxism is doing. So everything requires being aggrieved. It requires being a victim. It requires equity to equalize the state in which someone claims to be in and the pretended status that they claim to have. And so this is really to tear apart society.
Yeah, and I only have about less than a minute left here. I just, from what you found and your own experience working in this field, is it possible for them to, should people, put it this way, should people feel confident that these people in these agencies are able to do their jobs anymore the way they need to be done?
They're not. They're not able. Now, we see they were able in the case of, say, warning the Russians that there was going to be an attack.
Uh-huh.
So you see the people are still on the job doing things, and it's entirely proper to warn a country, even Russia, of course, that innocent civilians are going to be killed, that we picked up this intelligence. So there are people able to do their jobs. But when you have it that they're devoting huge amounts of resources and then everyone's going along with almost no dissent, that political leaders who they don't like are Russian agents or some kind of hostile asset when it's been proven to be a complete fabrication. Yet they still go along. You're finding people can't do their jobs, even the professionals who are left inside.
Well, it's pretty scary stuff.
I know FBI agents who've been taken off international child trafficking cases for the sole purpose of being on SWAT teams to burst into the houses of guys alleged to be at the Capitol on January 6th and not even accused of a felony.
Wow.
So we know that they're not able to do their jobs.
Pretty scary stuff there, Michael. Thanks for coming on the show. I'm glad you were able to be part of our inclusion one of our guests.
Oh, it was very diverse of you, John. I really like being back with you.
Thank you very much. Hope to talk again. Thanks, Michael.
Okay, sure thing. Bye.
That's Michael Waller. Once again, the book is Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. I'll be right back. Boy, I wonder if they're still upset at MSNBC. They went crazy. I think they have been going crazy for the last couple of days. It started on Sunday. Well, it actually started when MSNBC decided to hire Ronna McDaniel, who was the head of the RNC, to be some kind of an analyst. And that didn't go over too well with the employees. Not very well at all, as a matter of fact. And we'll get to Chuck Todd in a second. You may have seen that he apologized to Kristen Welker, who had to do an interview with Ronna McDaniel on Meet the Press on Sunday as a, you know, I guess welcoming the new employee. And it was, that's when Chuck Todd came on and apologized to her on the part of MSNBC for making Welker have to interview her because he said they shouldn't have ever hired Ronna McDaniel. So, they're upset, obviously, because Ronna McDaniel worked for Donald Trump, and they have such a bad case of Trump derangement syndrome. They can't see straight. They can't think. They don't have reputation for having a whole lot of introspection anyway, because the hypocrisy is just so blatant that only a total lack of introspect would allow them to make so many ridiculous statements and be upset about things that they do themselves. There are plenty of examples of it, but I'll let you hear Rachel Maddow. I don't know. I guess this is last night. She does a show once a week on MSNBC. I think that's still what she's doing, one night a week, Monday night. They're paying like $20 million a year to do one night a week. But here's part of what she said last night.
And so I want to associate myself with all my colleagues, both at MSNBC and at NBC News, who have voiced loud and principled objections to our company putting on the payroll someone who hasn't just attacked us as journalists, but someone who is part of an ongoing project to get rid of our system of government. Someone who still is trying to convince Americans that this election stuff, it doesn't really work. That this last election, it wasn't a real result. That American elections are fraudulent. Because that argument, that is a necessary part, that is the most necessary part of the overall project of getting us as Americans to give up on this election stuff. Because wouldn't we rather have a real man in charge anyway? Somebody could really get some stuff done. If only we could clear away all the things in his way. We have a long history in this country of forgettable men telling us that we need a new system of government where everything's under their control and politics is over and this new strongman way of government is gonna make America great again. We have had a lot of these guys. But our generation's version of this guy has gotten a lot farther than all the rest of them. And why is that? He would have been as forgotten as all the rest of them had he not been able to attach himself to an institution like the Republican Party, and had the leader of that party in his time not decided that she wouldn't just abide him, she would help. She would help with the worst of it.
The worst of it. Let me just tell you something about Rachel Maddow, okay? She's very good at television. She's good at reading a teleprompter. maybe you could say she's too good by half, and I'll explain that. I actually work with college kids, and I'm kind of a coach, and I teach them how to write and write for television and how to perform with a teleprompter. And it you may think it's just reading, and it's just not that hard. How hard can it be to sit there and read a teleprompter? But if you worked with young people who are trying to become broadcasters, you would see that it's not that easy. You'd also, unless you've done it yourself, you would probably find out that it's not as easy as you think it is if you tried it yourself. The hardest thing to do is to not read and not act and not sound like you're reading to an audience. The really good people, and she's one of them, I'm talking about technique-wise now, the really good ones are able to speak to one person at a time and look into the camera, read the teleprompter, and make the viewer, one viewer at a time, think that they are being spoken to, not read to. She's really good at that, almost to the point that it's annoying. And I'll tell you why. If you saw her delivering that soundbite you just heard, you would see her pause at key moments and take a deep breath and look up into the sky and sigh and, you know, look very pensive and disturbed. It's an act, okay? Because she's reading a script from a teleprompter and she's pretending like she's just thinking up that stuff right now as she's speaking to you. And just, it's really, really a problem for her because she's becoming emotional. She wrote it a long time ago. Then she's reading it from a teleprompter. Trust me. Okay. So that's one thing, but that's okay. That's why she gets paid a lot of money. She's very good at it. I was pretty good at it. I was very good at reading a teleprompter and that's why I'm teaching it to kids, because I was good at it. I could write for television, and you thought I was talking to you most of the time, and I was reading a teleprompter. And there were other people I worked with who were every bit as good as I was, but you have to be pretty good at that if you want to be successful in TV. So she's very good at that. But just listening to what she said about Ronna McDaniel being someone who said that this election was illegitimate and that she doesn't even believe in our elections anymore. She thinks they're fraudulent. How many times has she had Hillary Clinton on her show and kissed her butt for long periods of time without ever bringing up, hey, you know, Hillary, do you still think that the 2016 election was illegitimate? Because I have this video here I can play for you. Matter of fact, I have, you know, maybe three or four different versions of you saying that Donald Trump is not a legitimate president. This is what I mean about them being totally clueless and having no ability to just have any introspection at all. She says that in her big moment there last night when she's talking about the hideous decision by her company to hire the enemy, which is the head of the Republican campaign. And it doesn't occur to her that probably within the last few weeks she's had Hillary Clinton on her show to talk about something. And none of that stuff counts. And there's also, I'm sure you've seen it, and we've played it here, there's a compilation of people back then saying that the election was illegitimate. Nancy Pelosi said it. They were all saying it. And they were not dismissed by MSNBC or most of the media for declaring that our elections are fraudulent, which is what Rachel tried to say in her message last night. So they need to, you know, just get a clue. So then there, now this is Chuck Todd, who, by the way, is guilty of the exact same thing. He's not nearly as good at TV as Rachel Maddow is. I don't know how I've always wondered how he went as far as he did. He finally got booted out as the host of Meet the Press. Now, here he is on Sunday. He's apologizing to Kristen Welker because she had been put in the position of having to interview the enemy.
I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation because I don't know what to believe. She is now a paid contributor by NBC News. So I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract. There's a reason why there's a lot of journalists at NBC News uncomfortable with this, because many of our professional dealings with the RNC over the last 6 years have been met with gaslighting, have been met with character assassination. You got put into an impossible situation, booking this interview, and then all of a sudden the rug's pulled out from under you. You find out she's being paid to show up. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's real unfortunate, except that they hired Jen Psaki, okay? And there was reports that she had actually been basically hired, if not actually signed a contract, but she had been negotiating and had agreed to go to work for MSNBC and NBC while she was still working as Joe Biden's press secretary. And I don't know, maybe that's a little bit unethical to be out there as a spokesperson where you're supposed to be as neutral as possible and as forthcoming as possible and as honest as possible. And then you're already, and you're speaking with the media and you're policing the media, but you're actually, while you're doing that, you're also part of the media because you've agreed to take a job with the media. That's what she did, okay? And that was okay. That was fine. Nobody had a problem. Nobody at MSNBC had a problem with that. And in the interview that Kristen Welker had to do with Ronna McDaniel, she asks Ronna McDaniel about the election. Did Joe Biden win the election? And Ronna McDaniel said, "Yeah, he did. He's the president. He was certified." And Kristen Welker says, "Well, why didn't you say that? Why are you just saying that now? That's what Chuck Todd's referring to." Well, wait a minute. She's saying now that the election was legitimate, but she wouldn't say it when Donald Trump was out there saying that there was massive fraud. Well, Kristen Welker went on. Ronna McDaniel went on to say that she is willing to accept that Joe Biden's the president. That's enough. But there were plenty of, she still has plenty of problems with what went on in the 2020 election. But for Chuck Todd and Rachel Maddow, she's not allowed to think that. Because if you question the election of 2020, if you continue to question it, you are an election denier, which is, I think, one of the two, Rachel Maddow or Chuck Todd, referred to Ronna McDaniel as an election denier. You're just not allowed to question anything that happened in the 2020 election unless you want to be declared an election denier. But as I said, there are people out there, and I could drag out a bunch of video and audio tapes for you to hear here, of people like Hillary Clinton saying that Donald Trump was not a legitimate president. They're everywhere. But they weren't called election deniers. So, you know, I'm thinking maybe the whole idea of having these people who work as flacks for one candidate or another, or even if they've been in position, a cabinet position, whatever, of them becoming analysts for networks. It used to be, before there was 24-hour news, you had Walter Cronkite on CBS, and he read the news for 30 minutes, and he went home. Back then he had Eric Severide come on. He was a commentator, and he was a liberal. But that's what he was not brought on and presented as having credibility because he worked for one administration or the other. He was a journalist. He was a writer. He was a commentator, and that's why he was there. Well, now you have Dick Morris, who came out of the Clinton campaign and went to work for Fox for a long time. He's been on the show, by the way. You have Donna Brazile, who was the head of the DNC. She's been a commentator on CNN, and actually she got nailed for giving Hillary Clinton in advance questions that were going to come from a town hall meeting, an advantage she gave to Hillary Clinton that she wouldn't give to Bernie Sanders, who was also running for the nomination at the time. She eventually admitted to doing it and said that she will forever regret having done it. Simone Sanders, who I've never seen, but she's apparently has a job on MSNBC. She has her own show, I think. She's the former senior spokesperson for Kamala Harris. How about we just don't bring those? Maybe it's a little bit lazy for news operations to just drag out famous names and famous faces and put them in front of the camera and just let them spew whatever they want because of the position they held until 20 minutes ago. Matt Gaetz, who I have no problem with, I actually like him. I saw him anchoring a show not too long ago on Newsmax. He's still in Congress. He can't be anchoring a show. It just destroys all credibility. And Jason Chaffetz on Fox, he was in Congress until recently. And he's a regular contributor. At least he's not still in Congress. But, I mean, maybe they could start rethinking the idea of automatically just as a person walks out the door after an administration ends, they walk in the door at MSNBC or Fox or CNN or CBS or any place. How about, I don't know, putting a little more thought into it? And I don't know that if you went and looked at Jen Psaki's ratings, she doesn't have 12 people watching her. I don't even, her show's on Sunday. There's nobody watching her. And let me tell you something. Whatever number of people are watching her, the same number would be watching, with a possible exception of members of her immediate family, the exact same number of people would be watching if I was doing the show. Because nobody's watching. Or if you were doing the show. But they get the name, and it's one of those things that might impress people when they have put out the press release that they've hired Jen Psaki. They think that's going to impress somebody, but nobody is watching Jen Psaki on MSNBC. Trust me, they're not, okay? But I hope she's having a good time. I'll be right back. So a little sports here to finish out. I don't know if it takes a genius to say what I'm about to say, but I think gambling might be becoming a problem for sports. You saw Otani, the Japanese pitcher with the Dodgers. There's a big story out there now where he is claiming that his interpreter stole $4.5 million out of his bank account and then used it to gamble. First, it started out where his interpreter said that Otani loaned him the money, and then they changed that story and said that nah, not really. Otani said he stole the money. So somehow you hire a guy as an interpreter, and he has access to your bank account and steals $4.5 million before you notice. Oh, $4.5 million. Wow, I'm surprised he did that. So the point is, not everybody's believing the story, and they're beginning to believe that that this guy might have been betting on baseball, which would mean he'd be banished, and he's the biggest thing to happen to baseball basically since Babe Ruth, okay? He signed a contract worth $700 million, guaranteed. So, and the other thing, you're watching the basketball now, the NCAA tournament, and these kids have NIL agreements, name, image, and likeness, and you have college kids getting paid, okay? Now, some guys are making actually millions of dollars to play college football, hundreds of thousands, millions. Here's where there's a problem, I think. You have kids now who can make, I don't know, $50,000, which doesn't sound like a lot of money when you're talking about millions. But a kid who knows he's never going to go to the NBA, but he's a pretty good college basketball player, he's a pretty good target for someone who wants to fix a game. You go to the kid and you say, how'd you like to make $50,000? Just miss a few free throws for me, or, you know, throw a couple of balls out of bounds. Let's see if we can shave the points off of a game. I think it's a big, big problem that's about to become bigger and about to become widely known pretty soon. I don't know. Let's see if I'm right. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.